Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between, without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners.
Happy kisses, my friends.
Good morning. Happy Christmas. I hope you had a lovely day yesterday, however you spent it, surrounded by family or with your partner or alone, whatever way you wanted to spend your day, I hope you got to spend it that way and enjoy it as much as you could. And for those of you who maybe couldn't enjoy yesterday for whatever personal reason, it's over now. Yeah, Stephen's Day to me is just feels like any other day, so there doesn't hold any significance whatsoever. So it's over now, it's done. And I feel really excited about a new year coming for some reason. I've had a really heavy few weeks with the kids being so sick and loads of stuff going on. So I'm really excited about the new year, which I haven't felt so excited about a new year for a long time, even though I'm not one for resolutions. But I just feel, a sense of excitement and a little bit of freedom coming into the new year. And of course, we're going to be releasing two episodes a week, which is deadly. I'm really excited about that too. Nervous because I have committed to it, but it's the next step for the podcast. And also, as I said before, to ensure that you all get to share your stories, feeling really fresh and excited about doing so. Anyway, on to this week's episode. I share my chat with Rosie, who talks me through her two pregnancies and the births of her little babies. One was in a hospital environment and the other was at home, supported by a midwife. So I think something really stood out to me in this episode early on was the power of sharing a positive story. So many people are nervous about sharing their positive story because, unfortunately, so many women don't get to have that experience for a number of reasons. But someone shared their really positive story and how excited the woman felt at the prospect of Rosie giving birth and was asking her, oh my God, are you so excited? And something really clicked with Rosie and she went into a really positive headspace and started thinking about birth as a really positive, beautiful, natural experience. That seemed to be a game changer for her, as Rosie will tell you herself. So she went in, she really then deep dived into doing a lot of preparation when it came to knowledge, doing hypnobirthing, and she had a really positive hospital birth. She then went on to have a gorgeous home birth as well, supported by a midwife, and she also shares those early few weeks after her first baby, which was pretty tough on her body and also no doubt mentally. So I will let you hear Rosie's story. There's a lot to take in and I think it's really important. I personally would have a pen and paper just to take down a few things, a few notes. So enjoy this week's episode. Thank you, Rosie, for sharing your story. As always, if you'd like to share yours, just get in touch on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie. Click on the Share Your Stories tab and I'll get back to you as soon as possible with a date for recording. Hopefully next year and not in 2024. Chat to you all soon and enjoy the rest of the Christmas holidays. So, Rosie, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. Thank you for coming on to chat with me tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Do you want to give us a little introduction to you and your family, and then we'll get stuck into your birth stories?
Yeah. So I am Rosie. My husband is Rob, and I have two kids. So Patrick is 2 and nearly 10 months, and Ava is 10 months because they were born. It's easy to remember because he was born on the 23rd and she was born on the 22nd of February.
Ah, okay.
It was touch and go whether they would be sharing birthdays there for a couple of hours. But no, they managed to keep separate birthdays. So we'll see how long the novelty of a shared birthday party lasts. So, that's kind of us.
So will we talk about conception on your first pregnancy?
Yeah. So I think myself and Rob, we always knew we wanted kids, and once we were married, we felt like we had to wait for marriage. But once we were married, we're like, okay, well, listen, we want kids, and why wait? And I think we both assumed it would take a while because, we had a lot of friends who it took them a while and we didn't want to take for granted that would happen instantaneously. So we kind of presumed it might take 6 to 12 months or whatever it is. So it didn't. We were very fortunate that Patrick was conceived on our honeymoon. So we came back, and I just remember I had a Friday and a Saturday wedding the following weekend after coming home, and I didn't for a minute dream that I could have been pregnant. So obviously when I did the test on the Monday and, so I was pregnant, I was frantically Googling, what effect can alcohol have this poor, the creator wasn't probably even embedded yet, but still, yeah. So, and I just remember looking at the pregnancy test, and I suppose in your 20s and stuff, pregnancy is not something that you ever want, or it's not something you're ever what I wasn't planning for. So to look at it and to see that it was positive and for it to be a really good thing, I just remember being like, oh god, okay. I was so shocked because I really didn't expect it, and then we kind of had to almost convince ourselves that this was a really positive thing, and it was we were absolutely delighted and thrilled. And and I suppose the first pregnancy, Patrick's pregnancy, went really smoothly in general. I think I was very lucky. I didn't have any morning sickness, any symptoms bar tiredness in the first trimester anyway. And then I remember I had a friend who was pregnant, and she was about, I think, 8 weeks ahead of me. So she was kind of being like, okay, well, I got to 12 weeks and I felt way more energy. I had way more energy. So I was kind of waiting for the 12 weeks. And I think I got it back about 13 weeks and I just felt great again. And then I didn't start, I think, showing till maybe 20 weeks or so. So I remember there was a distinct time around 18 weeks that I was like, God, am I pregnant at all? I didn't feel pregnant. I didn't look pregnant. I just, I just felt really good. And then, I went publicly in general. And actually that my sister-in-law was the first person I told, because in the early days I was trying to decide, do I go public? Do I go private? Because you have no idea. Like, until you actually get pregnant, I was like, oh, I need to know. And I think, on the first pregnancy, we didn't really want to be telling people until we'd had the first scan and stuff. So I was just like, oh, how do I find out this, So, my sister-in-law, she kind of had gone public and she'd been happy with it. So we kind of said, well, listen, we'll go down that route as well. And we had a first scan at 20 weeks and all good. And yeah, it kind of progressed with no real, nothing really kind of negative, really. And I was able to kind of stay pretty active kind of throughout the pregnancy, which I think was quite important to me. And I think, I suppose, the more I read about birth and pregnancy, the more I kind of really wanted to get involved in the whole process myself. And I'm trying to, it was actually, there was one conversation which I think had a big impact on me, and it was with a colleague in work. And I've never told in the work where I worked previously, I never told her this, and I wish kind of I had told her it. But I think when it's your first pregnancy and you're just exposed to everything you see, you know, on the TV, and you know, this is what, you know, pregnancy is, and this is birth is, and all that kind of thing, and you're not shown an alternate. And I remember her, she'd just come back from maternity leave, and she was like, wow, so are you looking forward to labor and birth? And she was like, God, my birth was so great. And I was like, huh? Like, it was literally the first time anyone had broached the fact that, you know, labor and birth could be great, and it didn't have to be like the, you know, what you see on TV and what you hear about, because all you hear is like the awful stories, and people are going, oh, you, I work in healthcare, and I'd often be dealing with patients in pain and stuff, and they're always like, oh, but yeah, but it's not as bad as childbirth. And you're like, okay, well, you know, so you have these awful expectations. And I just remember having that conversation with her, and she was just so positive about it. And she recommended that I do some hypnobirthing, and recommended the Tracy Donegan book, the Better Birth, with the Irish specific one,
Gentle Birth, yeah,
and it was they were amazing, and she lent them to me, and I read them, and again, that was my first kind of dalliance into looking at like birthing as a very positive thing, and something that you could have a lot of control about. Because again, up until that, I would have been like, hand me the drugs, hand me the epidural. Like, you know, I'd have been very happy to kind of medicate me up and that kind of thing. And the more I read about it, and then I got Rob to read about it, and we were like, oh, okay, no, like that's not necessarily, doesn't have to be normal, and doesn't have to be the way you do it, because it's very much, I don't know, again, I suppose it's the norm is what everyone else experiences. And that's all the information I was getting, that, you know, you have to do X, Y, Z and all that kind of thing. So, I think definitely those, I signed up to a hypnobirthing course, and I found that really helpful. And the Tracy Donegan book was fantastic, because it just went through all the eventualities as well, and all the, you know, the potential, you know, painkillers or different options that you could have, and the pros and or the risks and benefits of all those kind of things as well. So I definitely went into it kind of feeling, you know, a lot more positive about it. And I think I said it as a or I saw it as a bit of a kind of challenge as well. Would have been quite fit, and I would have done a lot of little endurance triathlon and that kind of thing. So I would used to kind of seeing what my body could do. But okay. I very much saw, I was kind of like, God, I'm really interested to see how I cope with labor and that kind of thing. I was really not as a challenge, but kind of as a challenge that I saw. How's my body going to cope? And, you know, I don't feel like I have a low pain threshold, but I'm not sure if it's high either. So I wonder how I'll get on with that. And so I was really excited about it, actually. And I think as I progressed on, I kind of got more excited about it. And I tried to keep kind of fit and swimming and running, and I stopped running at about 20 weeks, but was kind of walking and that kind of thing. So and then I changed jobs.
So, you know, when you voice to people, say, if people ask you, how do you feel about birth or this, that, and the other, you know, the way you come across that, especially in your first pregnancy. Did you let people know that you were excited just to kind of put that guard up that you don't want to hear?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Because people would be very quick to go, wait till you're in it. They'd really like to shoot you down and kind of be like, you're lovely and innocent and naive. And you're like, no, but you know, I genuinely am. And, you know, we've been doing it since the dawn of time. So, you know, like there has to be something innately positive about the whole thing, aside from having, you know, the wonderful baby at the end of it. So,
So then how were you in your final trimester?
So in my final trimester, it definitely got a bit harder, and I changed jobs when I started a new job when I was about 30 weeks. Which for that period of time, so we knew that there was a move kind of coming up, but we didn't want to do it till after the maternity leave. So we stayed where we had been living. So it meant about an hour and 20 minute commute each way, which I found really a struggle, especially it was January time. So I think I probably finished work a bit earlier than I would have otherwise, because the actual practicality of sitting in my car and driving and with the bump and everything like that, as well as just the tiredness and stuff. So I finished about 35 weeks, I think it was. And then, and I was delighted I did, because Patrick ended up coming at 30. Patrick came the day before my maternity was officially due to start. So I was really delighted I had those kind of two and a half weeks of full on nesting and frantically, you know, decorating his, because we knew we weren't going to be in the house really for, you know, we might be in it for kind of 10, 12 months. So I didn't want to be doing too much before we moved out. But still, you want your firstborn to be in a room that resembles a kind of a nursery. Not that he ever slept a night in it, but anyway, that's kind of a different story. So I think I was feeling pretty good, actually, to be honest. I think I was really lucky throughout the pregnancy that I generally felt very well. And I think it was, will I go on to when?
Yeah, so just talk us through the early signs of labor. Yeah.
So I remembered distinctly that we were sitting, it was a Friday night, we were sitting on the couch and we were due to do our second hypnobirthing class the next morning. And then I was meeting my mum to go to the cinema or something. I can't remember what I'm going to see. But so we're sitting watching a movie and I went up to go to the toilet. And I one of those moments where I was like, oh, did I wee myself a little bit? Or what is that? Or, you know, I'm like, is it a discharge? Is it? I didn't pay too much attention to it and went back and went to bed. And then I think I woke up around 3 o'clock or something. And again, there was kind of could feel a little trickle. And I was like, oh, okay. So I got up and then I started, you know, I started Googling, you know, signs of water's breaking. And everything was kind of like, put a pad in. If it's soaked within an hour, then your waters are probably gone, or it could be your hind waters or whatever it is. So I did that and got up again, and like it was maybe a little bit damp, but you know, nothing that kind of obvious. So I kind of thought, oh no, it's not it. And went back to bed, and then kind of woke up at 6 o'clock, and I could still feel, I was like, oh, there's something happening here. But you know, I felt well otherwise. So I rang the maternity unit and I just, you know, I kind of gave them an update, and I was due to be going in there anyway for the hypnobirthing. So they said, listen, pop in a bit early. I had to drop in a sample anyway. So I said, pop in a bit early and we'll see. So we were kind of getting ready, and I think we were going in my husband's car and the bag was in my car. And I was like, oh, will we move it? Will we not? And listen, we'll throw it in anyway. And so we headed in and we went into the unit and Leop and they were kind of doing the tests. And, you know, I don't think they were overly concerned, like the trace, the spine. There wasn't much, you know, I suppose, coming out of me or anything like that. So I got Rob to run down and just tell the hypnobirthing that we'd be a little bit late, that I was just getting checked out. And then they came in and they did a little swab to test if it was amniotic fluid. And then she, I remember the doctor, and she was like, yeah, that's amniotic fluid now. So you're going to have your baby. And I just burst into tears. I was just like, so I think so shocked, because I suppose you wait nearly 9 months for this to happen, and then when it actually, you're told it's going to happen, I just didn't feel prepared at all for it. So then they wanted us to stay in. So even though, I mean, in hindsight, we only lived about 15 minutes from the hospital, I kind of wish I'd fought my corner a bit and gone home. But anyway, we stayed in, and they kind of worked it out that I'd have to start the prophylactic antibiotics that evening. So we got the ball and we just hung around the hospital waiting, really. Went for a few walks. They didn't want us to go too far, and we went for lunch across the road, and we walked up and down the stairs sideways and kind of.
Were you feeling anything at all?
No, nothing at all. Nothing at all. Rolling on the ball, all that kind of stuff. And then Rob went home then that evening, and I went to bed, and I think they started me on. The doctor, she came and she did a sweep that evening, and that was really uncomfortable, really uncomfortable, really not nice. But you know, nothing happened then. And yeah, so it started me on the antibiotics, and I went to bed and just lay there, kind of every tiny little twinge I thought I felt, I was, you know, God, is this it? Or is that it? Or is that it? Or, you know, so nothing happened. Next morning, nothing at all. And then the doctor came back, and pretty sure she did a second sweep that morning. And then they had told me that they'd bring me back down for an induction at, I think, 9 o'clock or something. And then, you know, nothing was happening. So we were trying to kind of chase them. And you know, I was feeling so impatient and waiting. And I just remember two other women in the room with me, both of whom were expecting twins. And I think one was maybe 35 weeks, the other was 34 weeks, and they'd been in hospital since 30 weeks. So anytime I felt a bit too impatient, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, it's all relative, like, you know. Then at I was brought down to the delivery suite about 11, I think, and hooked up to the oxytocin drip at 11:30. And then, they kind of started ramping up, and it went like, you know, I think pretty went from like feeling nothing at all to, you know, feeling a lot very quickly. So I found, that quite intense. But I think, you know, I think you do kind of, you know, I remember in the preparation and everything, they're kind of like, oh, don't watch the time, and really focus on what's happening to your body and all that kind of thing. And I didn't kind of believe it, because I was like, God, if you know, how could you do that for 10, 12 hours? Whereas I think when you're in the throes of it, time becomes just so irrelevant, because you're just, you just go very much into yourself, and you kind of, I think you do try and block out where you are in the environment as much as possible. So I wanted to stay kind of as mobile as I could. So I had the I had the ball, but I did find it very awkward because I was being induced. They had the kind of constant monitoring on my belly and that kept falling off. And then anytime I moved position, we'd have to like strap it back on. And I did like, I did find that quite restrictive. But you know, my midwife was, you know, she was great now. And she was very, you know, she sat me down and she went through my birth plan or my birth kind of wishes and intentions and stuff. And she was very supportive in that regard. And we tried to create a kind of a nice environment. We had music, we had like a playlist I had played on, or I had chosen on, and you know, Rob was there and stuff. And we were very lucky. This was literally 3 weeks before the COVID restrictions came in. So we were very lucky in that regard that we didn't have any restrictions on us. So I think I remember at one stage the contractions being quite intense, and I very much found the position which I felt most comfortable in was the back of the bed up and kind of leaning on the back of the bed and doing lots of kind of half squats and then straightening up and kind of I suppose moving with the surges and that. And I was using the gas and air, and I found that really helpful, really good actually. And I think at one stage she was like, okay, I know you wanted me to ask you, would you like an epidural before it was, you know, maybe you're too, kind of too far gone or whatever. And she was like, what do you think? And I remember kind of I was saying to her, okay, well, you know, how much worse does this get? You know, how am I doing? And she was like, listen, you're doing great. I actually, you know, it's not going to get much more intense than this. And you know, she was like, I think you can do it without it. And I, you know, I think somebody else having the belief in you, you know,
yeah, like, okay, amazing. Right. Yeah.
Okay, I can do this. I
game
can
changer.
Do yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, whereas if she, you know, and especially because you are very much, you know, especially for your first labor and everything, it's completely unknown territory for you. And they're the professionals and they're the ones who see it all the time. So you put a lot of trust in their opinion and that kind of thing. So it was really like to hear her kind of say, you can do it. I was like, right, okay, I can do this. Okay, we'll do it with just the gas and air. So and we tried different positions, kind of over the back of the bed, as I said, was most comfortable for me. We tried doing like kind of squatting down, holding onto the bed, but I just like my legs couldn't hold me. And yeah, you know, and that was definitely, and actually side, lying on my side was quite comfortable as well. And she had one of the peanut balls, which I had my legs on, which was really nice. So we just, like, I think it just tried to stay as mobile as possible. And then, I mean, I have no idea what time later, but I think sooner than any of us expected, I kind of said, oh, I think I need to push. And like, oh no way! I don't think you need to push. And I was like, I think I do. And she was like, okay, well, listen, like, let's have a look and let's see. And because I think maybe I was only I was 2-3 hours. I don't know. And they did an exam. They were like, oh, okay, no, actually, no, there's a head. Yep, you can, you can push. And I was like, oh, okay, like delighted. Cause you know, again, I had this like hours and hours in my head. So, yeah. So I'm trying to think, there was definitely at one point she was like, oh, I really, before we get to that, like it would be great now if you did a wee, because I was you're on the fluids the whole time as well. I did feel like I was about to burst, and I think, you know, she was like, now here's a bedpan. And I was like, I have never peed in a bed. What, you know,
it's how just, do you aim, you know, into that when you're lying on your side?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, no. And I was like, I think I'd prefer to go to the toilet. And she was like, oh, I really would prefer you not to go to the toilet. And I was like, well, I just, you know, I'm like, will not be able to pee in that. So, you know, Rob, now I don't know if I believe him, but Rob tells me that like baby was practically crowning, and I was like running across the corridor to do a wee, midwife kind of like following me, just making sure nothing happened. But yeah, anyway, we kind of got back and we started pushing, and then the pushing phase, I remember someone, one of my good friends, described to me, pushing, it's not painful, just like trying to do a really big poo. So I had kind of that in my head, and it wasn't like it wasn't painful per se, but like it's just that pressure was very intense. And yeah, so the pushing phase lasted quite a while. And I was, yeah, like I remember just feeling exhausted. And you know when you're kind of having two people down the other end of you kind of going, go on, go on. It's like you're at a match or something. You're like, oh God, you know what? And like, I can't, you know, I was kind of, for Rob, I think I was racing against him and we were trying to change positions. And then they were like, okay, I think we need to do a little, a little cut or a little episiotomy. So they got one of the doctors in for that. And I think they did the little cut, and then maybe one or two pushes later, Patrick was born. So, so I think from, he was born at 4:27. So I think from start to finish, it was 4 hours. So, I was, 5 hours. Yeah. So, so it was really, I suppose it was quite quick and quite intense. But yeah, like, you know, I suppose once they put them on your chest, you're like, oh, this is the best feeling ever. And and he had like a full head of hair. He was just full head of hair, which he never lost. So so it was really special, and we were really lucky because like we got, actually remember it was that time when between him being born and us leaving the delivery suite was, I must have been about 2 hours. Like it was lovely, and we were just kind of left to our own devices. Yeah. And because you know, the midwife had so much paperwork to do and that kind of thing. And you know, yeah, the tea and the toast was, I mean, people tell you, but God, it's not until you actually taste it you're like, this is literally, oh my God, I hadn't had like white sliced pan in years. And you know, the really cheap marmalade that you'd never have, I was like, this is like manna from heaven, like it's gorgeous.
And how did you decide to feed Patrick? Did you breastfeed him or bottle feed him?
Yeah, I breastfed him. So definitely I was always, I suppose, I was approaching it with, you know, that's definitely what I'd like to do, and I hope, you know, I'll do what I can to make it work. And I was really, really lucky. He latched on really well for the first feed, and I remember, you know, thinking, oh my God, this is what it feels like, you know, because I'd never, you know, you kind of know in theory what you're going to do, but I was like, oh, I never knew what it would actually feel like. So, yeah, that was really special. And he fed from day one, really. He fed really well, bar I think the first night, because he's born 4:30, so the first night and the second night, I think I was really lucky that the midwives on the postnatal ward were great, because I must have rang the bell like 5 or 6 times. Like, just couldn't get him, I couldn't get him on myself. But once I just, you know, you just don't know how, like, it's a completely new skill. You've no idea how to do it. Nobody teaches you. And, you know, you'd be kind of, I'd be there kind of holding him and trying to get him to kind of, you know, whatever is it, kind of nipple to bottom lip, top lip. I can't remember what it is now. I can't remember when they're newborn. You're like, what I did? There was some skill that.
And you're there. So tense and sweaty, and it's awkward.
Oh, I know.
And, yeah, yeah.
Oh, exactly. And then the midwives would come in and they'd just be like, they'd grab him and they'd like thrust him onto you, like really, it's like, oh my God, look at this poor little child, they're so delicate, and what are you doing? But then he'd latch and he'd feed. And you know, I think when I think of Ava compared to Patrick, you know, with him I had my hair bobbin on the wrist, and I'd like change, yes, it, the time, yeah, I changed, yeah, sides, and I was like timing, I think for the first 3 weeks, I timed every feed at every time of the night to make sure that, you know, whatever I was trying to achieve with that, I can't remember.
And the nappies, do you remember the app that would have the feeds and the wet and dirty nappies? And I used to do religiously with Oliver. And then with Eva, I was like, oh, actually, I don't have to do this. And then if, like, a couple of probably hours in, I was like, screw that. Like, yeah. You have enough to do. Yeah.
And it's even, it's the stuff like at night, you're like, I have to get up and change their nappies? What?
Yeah.
You know, it's again with like, with Patrick, it was like we were getting up and we were changing table and we are, whereas with Ava, it's like, you know, smack it on her and try not to even open my second eye. But the hospital, I was kept for, we discharged on the Tuesday. So they did all the checks and all that kind of thing. And it was nice, to be honest. It was like, again, like Rob was able to come in and kind of spend the day with me. And, you know, you just kind of, you do feel very vulnerable and tender, and you're sore. And like, I'd never spent a night in hospital, you know, and you're kind of, it's all kind of unknown and you're terrified of, because like, obviously they had her in the, what you call it, the bassinet thing. But I was feeding her and she was just waking a lot, you know, that famous first and second night. And I was kind of like, oh, like, I just keep her in the bed with me. I can't be like physically getting out of bed and putting her down and trying to like settle her the whole time. So I kind of, the midwife's very happy that I just bolstered up and it was safe enough, and she slept in the bed with me. And yeah, sure, like half the time you're just looking at them going, oh my God, how did this happen? Look at them, like, aren't they perfect? That was really nice. And we went home then, and it was just starting to be, the COVID talk was starting to ramp up a little bit. And I think as easy as my antenatal period was, I found the postnatal, especially the first couple of weeks, really challenging and tough. And I ended up kind of a week and a half after being discharged, I ended up with an infection in my episiotomy, which was horrendous. And again, it was one of those things that it was sore and it was tender. And I was chatting to a friend who'd also had one. We're trying to quantify, you know, so how sore was it for you? Mm-hmm. And so for how many days now were you not able to like really sit down? And then I was like, God, I think mine's a lot worse than that. Like, you know, now what's going on? And sure, like, whereas like the two of us are as bad, like we both work in healthcare. And then I remember on the Thursday, the public health nurse came out and I was like, listen, I'm really sore. And will you have a look? And she was like, oh, yeah, no, that's quite badly infected now. You need to go into hospital. And we're like, all right, OK. But once I was on the antibiotics, I was like, within a day or two, I was absolutely perfect. I was feeling much better anyway. And then I suppose the actual healing could happen. And then the following week, I think I just that day I finished the antibiotics for the episiotomy, I woke up and one of my boobs, my right boob, was really sore. No redness or anything, just tender. So I kind of thought, oh, maybe did I sleep with the bra on or I didn't, I can't remember what, but you know, I was like, oh, maybe the bra was too tight or whatever. And it wasn't that hardness. It wasn't the typical maybe kind of mastitis signs. And then I was trying to stay in bed most mornings. And I woke up at one point and I was absolutely frozen. I was like just lying in bed shivering. I was like, God, this isn't normal. And I took my temperature and it was, you know, 40 point something. And initially, of course, I was like, oh my gosh, I've got the COVID. And I think the lockdown had happened. The schools had closed on that Monday. So this was Thursday. So it was so new and so terrifying. And I remember, I think I moved Patrick into the hallway, and I just stayed in my room. And I was like, I think Rob was at work, and I was like, oh God, what do? I don't want to infect him. And, you know, I can't go to my GP because, you know, nobody's seen anybody. And I had a good friend who was a GP. So I messaged her and I was like, hypothetically, if someone presented with these symptoms, what do you think? And she was like, no, that sounds like mastitis. And I was like, okay, that's okay. So I did a telephone consult with my GP then, and he got me antibiotics, and Rob picked them up for me, and I started on them. And again, the next day I was feeling like almost normal again. So just between the kind of the two sets of antibiotics and everything, it was a rough couple of weeks. And then, you know, you're kind of, I just remember, you know, then they're talking about lockdowns and it all feels quite overwhelming, and you're like, oh God, you know, no one's going to see him. And I think he got a few visitors, in his first like 2 weeks, not many, just kind of, and all people I wanted to see. So that was really nice. But then we went kind of into lockdown, and that was it. And it was weird because I think for us, we became parents and COVID hit at exactly the same time. So our lives utterly changed. But we were never able to discern how much of it was because of COVID and how much was it because we became parents. And in some ways we were very lucky because Rob started working from home. So he was actually there, you know, 5 days a week. So we were able to kind of set up a nice little routine where he might take Patrick for an hour or two in the morning, and I'd be able to get an extra bit of a lie in. And if ever the day got a little bit too much, I could just kind of be like, listen, take him for an hour. I'm going for a walk, or I'm just going to sit outside by myself for a little while, or whatever it was. So that made a big difference to us. But also meant we missed nothing. Like there's no weddings, there was no parties, there was no nothing that would have been like, oh, you know, God, if we didn't have Patrick, we might have gone to that. You know, there was no holidays, there was no literally nothing. So it was quite a strange time. And obviously we didn't get to do any of the kind of baby groups and that kind of thing. But I suppose when you don't know what you're missing out on at the same time. Yeah. So I don't know if I missed it all that much. So that was Patrick.
Yes, so tell me when you decided to.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Conceive again, or did you?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, we knew we wanted to go for number two, and I kind of, for probably not the right reasons, but like I kind of felt, because I had started a new job and worked there for 6 weeks and then gone on maternity leave for a year, I was like, I'd like to be in the job a year before, you know, going out again. And I think I just, for to feel ready to conceive again, it took a while for me to feel ready for that. Because actually, one of the other things which I think is, you know, again, I think not a lot of people talk enough about, is that I got a prolapse after Patrick as well. So that was another thing that really affected me. And it was 100% my own fault as well, because, you know, I'm a physio, so I knew exactly what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing. And I was doing all my pelvic floor exercises, and about, I think it was about 8 or 9 weeks, I was like, okay, I'll try a little jog. And then went for a little jog and it was fine. And then I kept kind of building it up. But about 11 weeks, I went for a run. And then I literally felt it prolapse. I was like, oops, something's happened here. And it's just this heaviness and that kind of thing. So at that stage, I went to a pelvic health physio, a woman's health physio. And she was like, oh, yeah, you're not great at the old pelvic floors. And I was there, you know, doing them, thinking I was doing it all right and being like, oh, sure, I know what I'm doing. So, and I still wasn't doing them right at all. So I think my advice to everyone is go to see a woman's health physio before you go back to do anything. I think it took a lot of rehab, and I had a pessary for a couple of months. And, you know, I eventually got back running, and then I got back running without the pessary. And so it took a while for me to feel ready to go down the whole route of being pregnant again, and kind of feeling like I might lose all that I had worked for. So
your body went through a lot postnatally, didn't it? It really did.
Yeah, it did. It did. And that's why it's like antenatally, it really was a breeze. You know, the pregnancy was easy. And then the postpartum I didn't expect it, because you prepare for your antenatal and you prepare for the birth. And then you don't prepare for anything else after that. Or I hadn't. Or I hadn't even thought, you know, like you're you can only think so far before your brain explodes. So I really felt, that the postpartum part of it was tough, very much physically on me. But I got there, you know, and I was back feeling like pretty good again physically and that kind of thing. So that was nice. So Ava was, we just kind of after Patrick turned, after he was one, we were kind of like, okay, let's see how that this goes. And we were very lucky again that it happened very quickly for us. But oh my God, the second pregnancy was like, now again, relatively speaking, it wasn't bad, but the first trimester, I felt like I had been hit by a bus. I was exhausted. And at that stage, I was still feeding Patrick, and in January of that year, we had moved, and I had moved into a mattress on his bedroom floor, and we were co-sleeping, and he was feeding a couple of times a night. His sleep was, from the get-go, his sleep was not good, but we just rolled with it, you know. First trimester, it was kind of working 4 days a week and getting home in the evenings and taking to the couch and not being able to move off the couch, which would be so unlike me. I'd usually try and get out for a walk or something, but I felt horrendous. Not sick, thankfully, just tired, absolutely wiped. So yeah, so it was around that time we night weaned Patrick, and that was an absolute game changer. Like, oh my God, I think it was a tough week, and Rob did most of it. And I think we got, like, after maybe 7 or 8 nights, we got our first like 12-hour block, and it was just the most wonderful thing I've ever experienced. It was just like, oh wow, he can do it, because he'd never done it before. So like, wow, it is possible.
It's great when you have such a supportive partner, because we had to do it with Eva, because it was just it was kind of at the stage where it was just unnecessary and I needed it, like I couldn't function. And then Sean made a call. He was like, will you let me do this for you?
And I think that's it. Like, I think because I hadn't really been ready, and I hadn't wanted to do it, but then because it never bothered me that much. But yeah, when, you know, and but it came to the time, and, you know, in fairness, Rob kind of stepped up to the mark, and I'd been getting up and feeding him, you know, for the past 18 months. So he couldn't begrudge me a week of hardship. And then it was great. Actually, it was great. And I think I started to feel like a bit more myself. Though I did, like, in the first kind of, I think about 6 and about 8 weeks as well, I had a little bit of kind of early bleeding. And again, I think, you know, any blood in the first trimester is kind of scary and stuff. And, you know, it's like, oh, if it's a period, and I was like, oh, maybe it's a light period, you know, and you're kind of like trying to quantify it, and you're just in panic mode. So I had a few early scans. I think I had a scan at, you know, 6 weeks and 8 weeks, and then I had my 12 week, but always fine and always good. But like, they were, you know, like everything you're resorting to Google, it's like, oh yeah, it's probably normal, but it may not be normal, so you should get it checked out. And you're kind of, you know, we're so ingrained, I don't want to put them out and don't want to go in. And if I go in, then it means it's something, and I don't want it to be something. And anyway, so thankfully that was all fine. And yeah, the pregnancy progressed pretty well. Yeah, pretty good. But I think, again, I was working in the hospital at the time, and we were going through various COVID, swarms, COVID waves. And I think I finished working about 26 weeks or so. And actually, you know, the only other thing I had in that pregnancy, in the pregnancy, was I had a really severe case of what I think was round ligament pain. But again, I'd had it with Patrick a little bit, where it was, you know, it was the typical dull ache and that kind of thing. Whereas I remember I was on the ward with the students, and I just got this pain, I suppose, around my bump. This was early, this was probably about 23, 24 weeks. And I remember talking to them, but you know, when you're talking to someone, and I could feel, I was like, I'm not even sure if I'm making sense. I feel like my eyes were glazed over, and because I felt like I was going to faint. And I was like, okay, I just have to go downstairs. And I went downstairs and I lay down, and it wasn't improving. And it was very, you know, it was kind of right in my groin, like it didn't feel like necessarily in my bump. And again, you know, I think you try and convince yourself, I was like, I'm sure I'm fine, I'm sure I'm fine. And of course, like, I should have just gone to the maternity unit that was like on site. But I was like, oh, I'll go home, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. And I went home, and it didn't really improve. So I rang my GP, and I'd be good friends with him as well. And he was like, you know, take some kind of painkillers and see if it improves. But like, you probably do have to get it checked out if there's an issue. And so then I ended up having to get like my mom to come up to pick up Patrick. And then I drove back into the hospital that I'd left, you know, 4 hours earlier, that I could have just gone and gotten checked out at the time. But anyway, I went in and got checked out, and they were like, yeah, no, this is, you know, everything's fine, it's probably just round ligament. But it was just really a really strange kind of intense really pain. But again, thankfully, all was well. And then, yeah. So I suppose pretty early on in Ava's pregnancy, I had thought very, very briefly with Patrick about a home birth, but I don't think I was brave enough on the first pregnancy to explore it. I think there was too many unknowns and I didn't know how I'd cope and that kind of thing. So whereas in this pregnancy, I knew I could manage the pain, you know, that was fine. I survived on gas and air when I was being induced, and you know, everyone was like, oh, the contractions with the induction tend to be worse than a natural pregnancy or a natural spontaneous labor and stuff. So I was like, okay, yeah, I can handle the pain side of it. And I just really liked the idea of being at home. And again, I think because I worked in the hospital, I really didn't like the idea of, I didn't know, like this weird thing about coming into work to have my baby. And I know it wasn't, you know, it's just, I just didn't like that idea. I rang my midwife, and I rang her pretty early, like I think I was 6 or 7 weeks, and I spoke to her, and she told me the process. So to kind of let them know the 12-week appointment, and then I'd see a consultant to be signed off at 20 weeks. So that was kind of how it was done. And then I had to broach the topic with Rob as well, you know, and kind of see how he felt about it and all. And I think the more I read about it, the more, to be honest, to me, it felt really counterintuitive to go into a hospital to have my baby, so much so that I really didn't like the idea of it. When I could potentially, you know, I knew I was low risk at that stage, and that all being well, home birth would be viable. And, you know, I was happy in the evidence that it was going to be as safe as anything else. And I think once kind of that was sold to Rob as well, he was very much on board and happy with it. So we met the consultant at 20 weeks, and we were kind of able to ask him any questions, and he was like, yeah, you know, that's fine. That's no problem. So, and then like for me anyway, it was such an amazing service. Like really, I just, you know, it's like the one thing the HSE has done really, really well, and nobody knows about it, you know, it's mad. So we had our first, at that stage I was working from home. So all my appointments were at home. I didn't have to go into the hospital, which was amazing. And it came out, I think, at 28 weeks. And then we did all our appointments and chatted through everything. And, you know, you really get to know somebody and get a gauge of where they're at. And like, I got to the stage where I was like, okay, I know she gets me. And I know, like, we went through what, like, I suppose my wishes would be around the birth and that kind of thing. And I knew she got that. And so I knew if she suggested anything that maybe I wouldn't have something I liked, there would be a reason why she'd have done it, you know, that she wasn't going to suggest anything that, unless it, you know, if you get me, unless it needed to happen or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think having that relationship is just, I don't know, you know, it's just amazing. We had our appointments, and I think towards the end of the pregnancy, myself and Rob went on to pretty much lockdown, because at that stage, I think, you know, if I got COVID, then there'd be questions about whether I'd be able to have the home birth, and whether I, you know, at that stage, I think you were going to have to go into heparin and all this kind of thing. So We're just like, nah, just we won't see anyone, we won't go anywhere, which, to be honest, is fairly easy to do because there wasn't too much on. And yeah, like I was feeling pretty good towards the end of the pregnancy. And I remember, I think it was on, I wanted to do a little birthday for Patrick before baby was born to kind of make a bit of a deal of him. So I had planned that for the Sunday, I think. And then close to the time, I was like, why are we doing this? What? You know, we've isolated ourselves for the past few, you know, 2 months, and now we're going to invite both our families to for a completely unnecessary party that a 2-year-old will never remember. So I was like, no, I cancelled that. And I'm so delighted because I woke up that morning and I felt like absolute crap. Exhausted, couldn't get out of bed, and just absolute rubbish. And then I remember the Monday I woke up and I was like a new woman. I had like all this energy and it was a beautiful day and went for a walk and met a friend for coffee and all was great. And then I got to the end of the day and it was one of those days where I was like, I was busy all day. I was kind of like, God, I don't know if I did I feel baby move that much, or, you know, maybe I'll go up and I'll lie down for an hour and just, you know, just kind of just reset a little bit. So I went upstairs and yeah, like I could feel movement, but it definitely, you know, it like all through pregnancy, baby was really vigorous. And I always felt like she was more vigorous than Patrick, but then I could think you can never compare. You always think it's maybe different to the last one, or you, oh God, I never remember it being like this, but maybe it was. But yeah, she'd been really, really vigorous and she was still kicking away, but she just didn't have that intensity. And I was like, okay. But like, you know, I wasn't worried. And I had kind of read that sometimes there can be almost a little lull before the big event, but I didn't think too much of it. And then I woke up at 1:30 that morning and I was just like, oh, okay, I felt a trickle and I stood up and there wasn't a gush, but there was more of a telltale than I had with Patrick. So I was like, okay, will I wake up Rob? There was no contractions or anything at this stage. So I woke up Rob and I was like, okay, Rob, my water's broken. And he was like, yes, okay, let's go. So we went downstairs and we blew up our pool and we, you know, I ate some cereal and like we were all kind of ready to go. And then, you know, it was an hour later and I was like, right, yeah, absolutely nothing happening. So I rang and she was like, right, I'll be out at, you know, 6:30. You know, let me know if anything else happens. And yeah, I think Rob then went back to bed then. And I kind of, you know, I was just like sitting there in anticipation. And then, yeah, no, okay, I'll just go back to bed as well. Not that, you know, you're going to sleep that much. But I think I did. I slept a bit and I got up at 5:30 and I ate some more because Rob gets very anxious about food, so he was kind of encouraging me, you just need to eat as much as possible, like get as much food into you as possible. So came at 6:30 then and she kind of examined me and I don't think there was anything much. I think she was even mine, like, so she was like, it's definitely your waters that went now. And I was like, yeah, no, I definitely didn't wee myself. There was no question this time, it was definitely my waters. And she was like, oh, okay. So so she was like, okay, I'll do you mind if I do a sweep? So I hadn't wanted to do a sweep, but you know, I kind of knew I was on a clock. You know, it was the same as last time. Mm-hmm. I'd have what, 18 to 24 hours, and then, you know, it'd be bang bang, same as last time. So I was like, listen, I want every opportunity to have this baby at home. So I said yeah, and did the sweep. And it's just, you know, I think it comes down to when you know someone, when you trust someone. But like the sweep compared to the previous sweep was like, I mean, it was completely different. It was, you know, I mean, gentle feels like a weird kind of word to use, but it was so gentle. Yeah, it was so gentle. No other word. Whereas like in comparison, I was like, Jesus, the last one was like practically barbaric. Like it was awful. So, you know, it's just, So then, yes, did the sweep. And then I spent the morning. So she said, give us a ring at 2 o'clock. She was on shift in the hospital, actually, that day. So she's like, give me a ring at 2 o'clock and let me know how things are going. So, I mean, I spent the morning, I was drinking raspberry leaf tea till it came out my ears. I was eating dates. I was expressing colostrum. I had, I'd say, about 2 baths that morning. I walked, just everything I could think of, because I was like, which I'm not sure it helped, because I was so frantic trying to do everything to get this labor started. And then at 2 o'clock, nothing had happened. And frankly, she's like, OK, listen, there's still time, but we probably need to come up with a little bit of a plan. So she spoke to the consultant. The consultant was happy to give me the 24 hours, so I'd have to start the antibiotics at 1:30. So we're like, OK, well, do we go into the hospital? I don't want to go into the hospital at 1:30. So, but I also don't want to go in at 8:00. I want to give myself every opportunity. So we decided we'd go in at 11:30. And so kind of she was happy enough with that, if needed. And then I was on my ball. I was listening to my hypnobirthing and trying to relax. But kind of, I don't know, I think part of me was like a little bit resigned.
Yeah.
Like this is exactly what happened with Patrick. And, I think I was pretty, just felt quite disappointed by the whole thing, because, you know, I really invested in the home birth and what it would mean and how it would pan out. So, you know, obviously when things start, don't go to plan, it's that bit harder. But anyway, about half four, I was like just having kind of this, I don't know, odd sensation in my, or down around my sacrum and stuff, but nothing, just maybe a bit of, I don't know, pressure. I didn't know how to describe it. And around 5 o'clock or so, I was like, okay, I'm going to go for a walk. So went for the walk, and I could feel there was a lot of pressure around my back, but absolutely nothing at the front. And I suppose because I didn't go through a natural kind of spontaneous labor with Patrick, I didn't know what it felt like. So, you know, I was Googling like back labor and all this kind of thing. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And towards the end of the walk, I was like, oh, maybe there's something here. Could I time it? I don't know. And I had the contraction timer, and I think I started timing around 4:15, around 5 o'clock or 5:30. And I was like, I don't know, you know, I feel like this could all be in my head. Like I wanted these contractions to happen so much that I've literally willed them on and they don't actually exist. And so then Rob rang me a bath, and I got into the bath, and I had the timer on, and like by the end of the bath, I was like, okay, no, this is labor. No, I'm having kind of consistent, you know, I can't remember what the timings were, but I'm definitely having there's definitely an ebb and a flow to what's happening here. There's mm-hmm. definitely something happening. So I remember being like, okay, no, this is happening. This is good. And then obviously last minute, I was like, Rob, we haven't put up the next to me. So I was lying in the bath, and he was like cursing in the other room, trying to put up the next to me, you know, lastminute.com. And, the thing was never used, but anyway, besides the point. So I got out of the bath then and went downstairs. And I think at that stage I rang and I was like, yeah, I think it's happened. It's, you know, we're all systems go. And she was so thrilled for me. And she was like, oh, I was so disappointed for you earlier, because I know how much you wanted this.
No doubt. Just,
you know, she was so thrilled. So she was like, okay, listen, let me know if anything happens, but otherwise I'll be out at 9 o'clock. So I was like, that's grand, because, you know, things had only kicked off around 5:30. So then they gradually, I suppose, started to ramp up, but it was lovely. Like we were able to, you know, I had, the room was done, like, you know, we had the fairy lights off and the lights dimmed, and it was very much, we had whatever music I wanted playing, and it was very much just a really relaxing, nice space to be in. And it was, you know, it's home, like you're just, you're comfortable there. So yeah, I think Rob sat me down and put a chicken stew in front of me at about 7 o'clock, and I was like, oh Jesus, like of all the things now I want to eat, like I have to eat for your energy.
Nice smelly chicken stew.
Oh, like I mean, I was like, this is caught is lovely. I mean, I like pulled out the bread and I was like, I really give me some jellies or something. Because I know they was like, oh, you know, you need to eat in labor, but like I had no appetite at all. So I think I'm just trying, like, yeah. So I think things started to ramp up. And I think it was around that time I had like texted my mom, because I had let her know what was happening. And I texted her and I was like, I think labor started. I don't think we're going into hospital. And that was the message. So I sent that. And then, yeah, I was kind of just moving around and I found the ball great. Just kind of rolling on it, really. And then I think they definitely started getting more intense. So I remember around my mother-in-law brought Pat, because she was minding Patrick, and she brought him home and around 8 o'clock and brought him straight upstairs. And Rob was helping her put him to bed. And I remember that stage I was by myself downstairs. I just remember thinking, like, where the fuck is Rob? Like, I need him. I need him. Like, they were really, like, really intense. Because I think you do, like, I very much went into myself. But I needed, like, he was like my anchor, kind of just to, I don't know, just to kind of keep a hold of things, you know, just to, like, even just to have him to press. Like, I just, yeah. So, yeah. And I do, like, I did find, like, the contractions, I don't know, I don't, like, I did find it all very intense. And I think because it all happened quite quickly again, it was a lot. Now I used the tens and I found that great. And I found counting great as well. And I think, you know, and I, like, I think, I'm not even sure if I had the hypnobirthing tracks in the background or not, but I knew when the surges were coming that, you know, I count to 20 and they'd get really intense around 4 or 5. And then by 14, I knew I was on the home straight, that they were kind of, they'd be gone by 20. So I really held on to that during the surges, that just like counting aloud and squeezing Rob. And I remember I spent a lot of time like leaning on the couch and just rocking back and forth for each count. Yeah. So, yeah. So then I think, so she'd asked that I not get into the bath until she got there. So she got there around 9 o'clock. And yeah, like very, very in the thick of it at that stage. And she said, okay, listen, let me have a look. And at that stage, I think it was 8 centimeters. So she was like, quick, yeah, into the bath, off you go. So I got into the bath and, or into the birthing pool or whatever. And it was like, I don't know, it's like a warm blanket or something. It was the most amazing. It was just like exactly what I needed. Cause I had, you know, they were really intense and it just like it dialed them down by about, you know, 50%. I was like, oh, I can cope with these now. And I don't think it didn't slow them down, but it just the pain relief that I got from being in that water. And it was so warm. And like, it's such a treat. Like it's so deep and it's so big and you can like practically lie flat on it. And yeah, it was really nice. And I think it was one, and like I think, like, he very much left me to my own devices. Like, I think it's the greatest compliment you can give by saying that you barely knew she was there. Like, she, you know, she was kind of setting up her stations and all that kind of thing. But like, it was really just myself and Rob there, which was exactly, I suppose, what we wanted, really. And then pretty soon after getting into the water, I kind of felt the need to put, and I think, because I know that transition phase, or that transition, I never felt it. I don't think I felt it with Patrick. because I remember reading about it and being like, oh, well, did I have that? I don't know. Whereas I really felt it with Ava, that, you know, because I definitely had that, I can't do this. Oh no, I can't do this. How is this baby going to come out? And like, you know, just like the doubt, you know, you're just like, I can't, like, how is this going to happen? And then you kind of just work through it. And I think like, I definitely felt a lot more present. I don't know if that's the right word, but much more, I don't know.
In tune, maybe?
In tune, yeah, with the actual, say, the push phase. I don't think it was only a couple of phases, but I remember feeling like I pushed out her head, you know, and I kind of remember feeling that her head was born and knowing that. And I think at that stage, I remember being like, oh, the head is out. And I was like, it doesn't have hair, because Patrick had so much hair. And she was like, a little bit. I was like, okay. It was actually funny at that stage, because she was like, do you have a mirror? And it's like, oh God, like, I mean, if I have a mirror, I need to know where it is. So I kind of only realized this afterwards. So like Rob went out to his car and took his rear view mirror.
Oh, great idea.
And it wasn't until the next morning, because I was sitting and I was kind of looking at the birth pool and I was like, what's that in the birth pool? And it was like the air freshener tag off his. I was like, oh God, like, this is lovely and sterile. But anyway, she was born and he picked her up and gave her to me. And like, yeah, it's just that. I think just because I was so much more in tune with the process. And yeah, she just handed me, and you know, you're just like, oh, hello, you know. So yeah, it was lovely. So we were able to kind of connect with her for you know, I don't know however long we were in the water, and then we Rob took her and I climbed out and kind of got tended to. And I think the second midwife arrived about 20 minutes later, and she was actually, it was such a, it's a hard, I think probably a hard situation to come into, you know, you're kind of walking in to this room. And I remember distinctly I was kind of lying on the couch, like sprawled, butt naked, and she walked in and she was like, oh my God, you're like a Roman goddess. And I was like, I feel like a Roman goddess. I was, you know, you're kind of absolutely wired out in adrenaline and euphoria, and probably a little bit of gas in there. And you know, it's just, it was a, you know, the lights were very atmospheric, and yeah, no, it was lovely. Now it was, and I think I gave the delivered the placenta about 20 minutes later, and had a little stitch and had a feed, and yeah, and always good. So yeah, it was a completely, like, I would say both were really positive experiences. Like, I feel very fortunate, both very different, but I think, yeah, just like, I think the home birth was just I don't know, a descriptive word isn't yeah. And like everything, the pain relief, the like the soothing, like, oh, it was unbelievable. And I think for me anyway, definitely, because I had like that, like my Patrick's postpartum was pretty rough, this one was just like chalk and cheese, because I set my I don't know what I was trying to prove with Patrick, but you know, like there was a part of me where it's like, oh yeah, I need to be up and out and like doing this and that. And whereas with Ava, I was like, nah, I am staying in bed if I can get away with it for the full day, but at least until lunchtime. And like Rob was kind of working from home, so he was doing a bit of work, but we kept Patrick in creche, which was a godsend. And I was able to, you know, just spend the morning in bed and like make sure that the feeding was established. And maybe go for a walk in the afternoon if I felt like it or whatever. But it definitely being able to recover in your own bed, for me, that was phenomenal. And I think even the night Ava was born. So yeah, Ava was born at like, I think 3 minutes to 10. So we were just shy of her being born at, what was it? She was born on the 2nd, 22, just shy of 22:02. So we were like, we nearly had it perfectly. So yeah, and I was in my own bed at midnight, and it was just, you know, I was like, oh, I'm just, you know, nice sheets in the bed. I'm probably going to sweat fluids on them all night, but anyway, it's my own bed, and it felt really, really nice. So that was Ava.
Thank you. That was so nice. It's so nice too, because my experiences were pretty similar, and I had a really positive hospital birth and a home birth. So it was really nice to hear another story similar. Yeah, it was lovely. Thank you. Yeah.
Lovely chatting to you, and have a lovely Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Just quickly, if you are enjoying the podcast, I would love if you could show me your support by clicking onto any of the platforms that you use weekly. Rate the podcast, leave a little review to tell me that you're enjoying each of the episodes or the podcast in general. And it really goes a long way. It helps boost the podcast so more people get to listen to your amazing stories. Okay, thanks. Have a good week.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.